Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official Strange Talent of Luther Strode podcast. I am your host, Matthew Malikoff, and I'm sitting here with the entire creative team of Luther Strode. So why don't you introduce yourselves, guys?
I'm Justin Jordan. I'm the writer of The Strange Talent of Luther Strode.
I'm Trad Moore. I am the artist of The Strange Talent of Luther Strode.
And I'm Felipe Sobreiro. I'm the colorist of The Strange Talent of Luther Strode.
All right, excellent. So guys, why don't we start with the sort of secret origin of Luther Strode, and let's talk about how the project initially came together. So if memory serves, and I'm sure you guys have told this story a billion times, but it started with Justin. You found Trad on DeviantArt, correct?
I did. I had had the idea for The Strange Town of Luther Strode, and I was looking for an artist who had kind of what I would call a Ryan Ottley quality. I was looking for that sort of energy. And I just happened to stumble across Trad's DeviantArt. I'm not even sure how I managed to get on it. Probably linked out from somebody's other website, but I really liked what I saw, so I shot him an email.
And Trad, you were still in college at the time, correct?
I was, yeah. It was the summer in between my junior and senior year of college, and I was doing absolutely nothing at that time. So I got that email, and Justin, you know, had filled me in with all the work that he had done before, just with anthology-type things and, like, Zuda projects and things like that, and I liked everything I saw, so I jumped right on, and we started, like, the preliminary pitch work for Luther Strode that summer and into my senior year.
How did you guys go about bringing Felipe into the group?
Actually, Felipe and I had been on several websites, kind of in the same circles a little bit, and I was familiar with him, and I knew him from, he'd worked on a Zuda, it was Earth Builders, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and I knew him from there, so when we were looking for a colorist, we'd actually had another colorist attached, and he's a fine colorist, but it just didn't work out, and so I thought about Felipe, and I basically shot him an email and asked him to come on board, and I'm really glad he did.
That's right. Back then, they just had the 7 pages for the pitch plus the cover. So Justin got in touch and said, man, I know your work. How would you like to color this for us so we can send it to Image? And I saw the art and I loved it as soon as I saw it. And I thought it had a lot of potential. So I said, sure, let's go. Let's do this.
Excellent. So why don't you tell us and our listeners a little bit about how you guys started forming the pitch, how you decided to bring it to Image, and sort of how the project evolved from basically where it began with Justin, you going and contacting everybody, and eventually to print.
It actually took a while. I contacted Trad sometime in 2009. I don't actually even recall when. Trad, do you remember when it was?
Like I said, it was sometime during that summer, maybe July-ish of 2009, something like that. So yeah, it was a decent while ago.
And Trad actually put his pages together fairly quickly, but it took almost an entire year before we finally got Felipe on board. Not that that was Felipe's doing. It was just we had another colorist, and it was taking too long, and things got in the way. So it was almost a full year after that before we actually sent pitch into Image. And that was in sometime late in 2010. We actually had almost a full year before we went from our pitch to actually being on the stands. It actually went pretty smoothly. Aside, once we assembled this team that's, you know, speaking here now, it's all gone really well. But the thing is you're contacting people online, and yeah, they say they'll do it, and you've got to give them a week or two to go by, and that actually adds up pretty quickly to, you know, weeks become months, months becomes a year.
I guess from my end, yeah, I did. At that time when Justin had contacted me, I wasn't planning on being an inker, so I thought that I was just going to be doing pencils. So I had done the pencils in that summer of 2009, and then once we finally kind of like came to the realization that it might be better for me to just ink it myself, I actually inked it for a class, and then, like you said, a year later, Justin found Felipe, and I did the cover, and then, yeah, so the pitch process was it took us longer to put together the first pitch than it did the actually entirety of the rest of the series. So that's kind of weird.
Now, for those who are unfamiliar with the basic pitching process, what did your pitch contain when you sent it over to Image besides the pages that you'd worked on?
We had a cover letter that said who we were, what we'd worked on, and some contact information. And basically a one-page synopsis of that broke down what was going to be in each issue, and then the six or seven pages that we had done plus a cover, which is actually exactly what they tell you to put in, like, your submission thing. I always feel bad because people ask me about that, and I feel as if I should be revealing some kind of secret when there isn't one.
Chad, you were still in college at the point. Did you know that you wanted to be to work in comics? I know, Justin, you had done, like Chad was saying earlier, you had already done a couple anthologies in the Zuda comic, but Chad, this is like your first entry point, isn't it?
Yes, I did know that I wanted to get into comics. I went to the Savannah College of Art and Design where I was studying comic books. They have a sequential art program there. And so I was in that program, and I've known that I wanted to get into comics since forever. But yeah, that was at that point, it was still like scholastic for me. I didn't actually think that I would get into it, I guess, as quickly as we did. So that was definitely a cool thing to put that pitch together and have it essentially be picked up about 6 months after I graduated from school.
And Felipe, how about you? What is your comic history so far?
Well, I've been doing mostly web comics since 2004, 2003. I got published in some anthologies also in the UK and in Mexico. Then around 2007, I started to work with my father as a penciler, and I took over as a colorist, and we started to submit short stories for Heavy Metal, and we sold a couple. We got published over at Image's Pop Gun, number one, also. And then a few issues of both Zombie Tales and Tulu Tales for Boom Studios. And then I was sort of waiting for another project when Justin got in touch, and it seemed right.
So let's talk about Luther Strode as an entity. Now, Justin, you said that before you'd contacted Trad, you already had Luther Strode in your mind. So where did Luther Strode come from? How did you go about creating the character and the story?
I'm old enough to remember the Charles Atlas ads that used to be in comic books. And honestly, the Mac at the Beach one where the bully kicks Santa's face is a pretty iconic cultural thing. So most people are familiar with the concept, even if they've never seen the actual ads. If you look at that kind of stuff, going back in history, a lot of the ads would basically flat out say, you do our exercise program and we'll turn you into a Superman. You know, you'll be able to kick anybody's ass, live for a million years, and get the girl. And so I got, you know, the wild hair of, well, you know, what if that worked? Which I realize, you know, not wholly original to me, since Grant Morrison, like every other concept, has, you know, been there and done that. But it was something I wanted to explore. The other part was, I had this wild hair that, from a certain really skewed point of view, the distance between horror movie slashers like Jason, Michael Myers, and some superheroes was not that great. I mean, obviously, like, Batman doesn't kill anybody, but if you're a criminal, like, he's pretty much just as terrifying and in pretty much the same way as a nubile teenage girl being pursued by Jason Voorhees. And, of course, the Punisher, it's just a slasher who uses guns. So, and somehow those two concepts banged around in my brain, and then they became The Strange Town of Luther Strode. And actually, once those two met, like, I laid out the whole comic series plot and most of the characters stuff really quickly. It was a couple of days, actually. And I got a hold of Trad shortly thereafter that. It actually, that part of it went together really quickly.
Now, Trad, how did you go about designing the various characters from Luther himself to the librarian, Petra?
Well, Justin had given me, you know, he had an idea of what he wanted these characters to look like, but, you know, and just sent me, I don't know, a sentence to a paragraph description of each of them, like the, I guess, pretty standard, like, character description fare. And I don't know, they were just guys, when I do character design type stuff, I just try to put a lot of thought into the stories behind these characters and everything. And so I, the first pass of each of these characters just ended up becoming what they were. The only one that had, I guess, more thought put into it beyond the fact that, like, oh, he's a big scary librarian, was Luther's actual costume. We wanted it to be, like, kind of like a slasher, like Justin was saying, where, but we also wanted it to look like something that a high school kid could realistically put together. And, cause you know, Spider-Man does the whole high school kid putting his costume together, but no high school kid could really put that costume together. So yeah, I had actually made, there is a real Luther Strode mask that I made for an assignment once. And, that ended up becoming the Luther Strode mask because I was like, oh, I made this as a teenager, so why could Luther Strode not make the same thing? But yeah, a lot of influence from his costume came from Mike Myers and slashers and stuff like that.
Overall, whenever you see commentary about the comic, I think that overt horror slasher aspect is maybe the one that's not picked up as often as it should be. Most people see this as sort of a superhero type book than a slasher book. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's completely the opposite of what you wanted.
Basically. I mean, I'm not against it being a superhero book because it is that. But I felt that the... I'm surprised that a lot of people have not seen it as more of a horror slasher type book because that's how I've always viewed it. But I appear to be the minority in that regard.
Now, in terms of influences that you bring into the... the book, and it appears all over the comic in little backgrounds, sort of posters and things like that. But before we sort of dive into the book itself, what were the influences beyond, you know, the Charles Atlas ads, the basic slasher movie concepts? What specific stories did you sort of pull from in your influences when writing or illustrating the book?
I know when writing it, I actually, you know, we get compared to Kick-Ass a lot. Which is neither here nor there, grumble, grumble. But the actual kind of story that I was referencing was Spider-Man. And kind of, in a way, it's as far as superhero aspects of it go, it's kind of what if Spider-Man had never had an Uncle Ben? Like, you know, you get all this power, but you don't have any real solid guidance on what you're supposed to be doing with it. So for most of the story, Luther is kind of stumbling along trying to figure out, well, I can do all this cool stuff, so what do I do with it? And he doesn't have... He's had a hard life, but he's a good kid. But he doesn't have the same kind of, like, moral anchor that gives him the wisdom and experience that he would need to actually use that kind of stuff. Beyond that, oddly enough, I've actually... There's stuff that I grabbed from... Like, the beginning... we'll get into this when we get in the first issue, but obviously it opens up at a future time and then flashes back, which I actually stole directly from Goodfellas. So there's, you know, Martin Scorsese, because clearly I'm the Martin Scorsese of comics. And I actually also took a lot from Elmore Leonard, believe it or not, and even the television show Justified, which I know isn't obvious, but those Elmore Leonard in general and Justified while I was working on some of this actually influenced the way I did the writing. I tried the dialogue specifically. I was trying to make sure everything was said in the most interesting way possible while still being sort of naturalistic. So that was probably actually the major influences beyond, you know, the big overt Charles Atlas and horror movie vibes.
Yeah, and I think for me, I agree with the Spider-Man one. That was... like, in terms of comics, the ones that I was thinking about a lot were Spider-Man and Invincible and the 2000s run that J. Michael Straczynski and Gary Frank did on Supreme Power. Because to me, this kind of came across as like this, you know, it's got this Spider-Man type lead character, but he's, like Justin was saying, dealing with these powers in a lot... less responsible way, and to me a more realistic way than it's shown in Spider-Man. And so yeah, I think that Invincible does that really well. It has these characters with these crazy powers, and, you know, when a superhero punches someone, and if they can lift a house, you know, your head is going to explode. It just to me, is more logical that way. And Supreme Power touched on that as well. And then, yeah, in terms, there are a lot of, like, Japanese and Korean, like, movies were on my mind at that time, and I had been watching, like, Old Boy and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Ichi the Killer and stuff like that, and those all have to do a lot with violence and revenge and how far to take things, and is vengeance even really something that you would really want, because usually it just ends up hurting everybody. So yeah, those were a lot of my influences.
I don't want to sidetrack too much, but I haven't heard anybody mention the movie Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance since I was in high school. Like, I don't think I've ever talked to anybody that has seen that movie outside of myself, and it's a great
movie. I love that movie. I actually like it better than Old Boy, but I love Old Boy, but I just really, really like that movie. Thank goodness for Netflix, because it makes all that kind of, like, slipped under the radar new again, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen it as well, and also Lady Vengeance.
I actually have not seen that one. I need to see it to finish the
trilogy,
you know?
Yeah.
That's the most beautiful of the three, in my opinion. I also like the three of the movies. Old Boy is very good, but I agree that Mr. Vengeance is a drier violence, more deep hitting. So I really like the three of the movies, and I guess you really like Lady Vengeance, Thread. You should watch that.
Good. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I love all of Andrew Park. Yeah, he's a great director. I love all those movies.
Man, that one shot, one take hallway hammer scene.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I realize everybody goes over about Old Boy, not Mr. Vengeance, but man, that's a hell of a scene. Like,
it really is. Now, Felipe, for you, in terms of the influences on the comic, and this is not something you hear discussed a lot, but in terms of the palette that you took and the specific colors that you used for, let's say, the more violent scenes and then the sort of lighter high school scenes, what for you is your sort of coloring influence?
I actually didn't start to do comics as a colorist. So when people ask me my influences, I instantly think about artists and pencilers first, but I guess one of the main influences I have is Dave Stewart, that works mainly for Dark Horse, but he works all over the place. I think he's an awesome colorist. I really like his work. But specifically when I was working in Luther, I tried to sort of first match the style of Thread, because he has a very clean style, very stylized. So I sort of adapted my work to fit his, because I guess that's the work of the colorist. And in terms of the actual palettes and the colors, I sort of thought that the violent scenes needed to be, in the first scene, for instance, in the very first issue, there's a flash forward to a scene from the fifth issue when Luther's killing a bunch of people. And we kept it very deep and very desaturated, I guess. And then when we moved to the lighter scenes, we sort of went the same way with the colors, keeping bluer or greener, because we wanted to, for the scene to match the colors to match the feeling of the scene as a whole.
Yeah, actually, finding the right colorist is by far the hardest part for me of putting together a project. Just because there's a lot of modern coloring that I don't like. There's this kind of, I want to say over-rendered, but it's probably the wrong term, but there's definitely an over-digitalized kind of, you know, every surface has a shine on it sort of look that I don't like. I am, in fact, a huge fan of Dave Stewart for the fact that he doesn't do that. That's probably my preferred kind of coloring.
Agreed.
Yeah, he's very muted when he needs to be and not very flashy. I also agree that there's a school of coloring that keeps everything like plastic and shiny. And I guess unless you really need it, it's unnecessary to over-render. And that's what I felt like.
Yeah, and that's why I've been really impressed with Felipe's work on it. I mean, I knew he was a good colorist anyhow, but it's it works. The style he has used has worked so well with Trad's art that it's really elevated the book as a whole. I don't think colorists in general get enough credit for what they do, which is why I try to mention Felipe whenever possible. I don't do as good a job of it as I would like, actually, in interviews. But once again, Felipe, thanks for coming on board.
Thanks, yeah. Man.
Agreed. Well, yeah, and a lot of times with it's one of those things where, you know, the colorist is there, you know, to enhance the artwork. But then the more I worked with Felipe, there would be scenes that I would draw, you know, with him in mind, knowing his strengths and knowing what he could do with the scene. So a lot of times when I'm just inking my work for black and white, you know, I'll make the blood black, but knowing how good he is at making the red pop and everything, I never did that in Luther because he's just a master of using that ridiculously vibrant red, you know, so I left it all like.
And if he wasn't before, he certainly was after.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, this is the bloodiest thing I've ever colored.
So yeah, it's cool, you know, the more, I mean, and I feel the same way about working with Justin. It's like the more you get used to working with a group of people, you all have one another in mind, and you're playing to your strengths, but you're also doing things knowing that this other guy is going to do his job really well, and you want to give them an opportunity to shine as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's especially if, and people will get to see it eventually, but like if you look at the scripts for Luther, the panel descriptions get smaller and slighter as the time goes on. Because a lot of time, like, I've got a real good idea of what Trad's going to do, so it's just, you know, Luther kicks a guy's head off is basically the entire description, and I know he's going to do something awesome with it, so I just get out of the way and let him do his thing.
I like that you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people don't pay attention enough to the colorists or the talent of the colorists. Because, you know, not only is that true, but I think it's really more apparent when you sort of look at the black and white art and then you look at the finished art. And, Trad, your art is pretty ridiculously detailed anyway, even without the colorful additions. But just looking at the color on top of your line work, it really makes the book pop in a rather unique way. It's excellent.
Well, thank you. And that's why, you know, I like... You know, when I'm posting stuff up online, I love putting both versions of it because, you know, they're both inked and the colored because you get to see, you know, both sides of the equation. And they both stand alone as this, you know, really cool thing, you know. And, yeah, I think people do need to – I love it when artists post both versions because you really get to see how much a colorist adds to a piece, you know.